From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour will be made on June 25th, primary election day, when the city of Rochester will consider candidates for city council and for school board. And we're in the midst of perhaps the most extraordinary school board election of recent memory. That's because Mayor Lovely Warren is leading the call for a state takeover of the school board, which would include the dismissal of elected commissioners and the installation of a new board chosen by the state. The school board race presses on in spite of the uncertainty. Our intention between now and June 25th is to bring all of the candidates to Connections so you can hear their views, not only on the proposed state takeover, but you can hear their ideas for how to do the job of commissioners, what they want to do for the district. In this hour, we welcome four of the candidates in studio with us. Beatrice LeBron. Beatrice, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Welcome to Anthony Hall. Thanks for being here, Anthony.
Thank you.
Minister Clifford Florence. Minister, thanks for coming back here.
Thank you.
And Robert Hoggard is well here. Robert, welcome to you.
Thanks so much.
Well, there's a lot to talk about this hour, and it is an extraordinary time, and I'm going to start by going around the table and just asking everyone to kind of weigh in on what they've heard about a state takeover. Here we are on a Friday afternoon, and it could be any minute now that we could see something from Albany. I say that because if there is going to be that the kind of takeover that has been discussed, one would assume that legislation has to happen first, and the state session ends at the end of June. So there was a lot of talk that we could see it before the end of the week. We haven't seen it yet, but Mayor Warren is already talking about a plan, even though we haven't seen an official plan yet. Beatrice LeBron, I'll start with you. What do you make of the proposed state takeover?
So I make that it's not going to happen. Legislation has already been very clear that they're not going to do it. I think personally for me, my frustration is that we're not talking about any solutions that are actual doable with the current parameters and systems in place. And I don't mean just the systems in the school district. I'm talking about our legal parameters. Legally, this is a democratic elected process for the school board. That's not going to change by June 19th when the legislation session ends. So as a community and even with the mayor and the city and county legislators and our other elected officials, what are the conversations that we're having to work together to fix what needs to be fixed in the school district?
Okay. Anthony?
I piggyback on Beatrice as, the state takeover not being something that will be a reality here in Rochester. But while we're talking, let's talk about fixing the current situations and working together across the lines.
All right. Robert Hoggard.
Yeah, I think I think we're all... Of course, we don't know if it's going to happen or not, but it looks like it's not likely to happen. But what I do think is the current proposal on the table is very undemocratic. We need to allow the people to vote. We need to allow people to show up to the polls and to vote for the right people. We have some great people in this race, and I think we all need to show up to the polls and support the right people who know things about education and know how to drive this district forward.
Okay, Minister.
We ought to be focusing on accountability, equity, and quality for all of our students. And we should really be focusing now on bringing parents together, youth, families, and residents to engage in a collective dialogue. We need to come up with action that will bring about change. And then we should aim to disrupt the longstanding power relationships that produce failing schools in low and moderate income neighborhoods and communities of color. I think that that's really where our focus should be, and that's what's most important right now.
Mayor Warren has said that this is time, that there's been for too long dysfunction and failure. And she put out a video via social media, made some additional remarks yesterday, Minister. What would you say to the mayor if she were here right now saying, look, we've had failure for too long. This is not working. We've got to make a change.
Well, what we need to look at is the longstanding crisis that we have in special education. We need to get back to decision-making and relationship building that has everything to do with the parents and the students. The stakeholders in our community. We also need to develop a comprehensive system of support and deal with systematic anti-racism professional learning and development. We have critical issues that legislation can't deal with. It's work that all parties here in the community need to come together around. It's critical that we do that.
Okay. Robert Hoggard, what would you say to the mayor who is helping lead this call for a takeover?
You know, we had some education experts here yesterday with the Public Policy Institute, David Osborne, and we were listening to some folks from cities like Indianapolis, from cities like D.C. and Springfield. And when you look at the best practices in education reform, state takeover is not one of them, right? State takeover and the proposal that we're looking at it in the way we're looking at it is not what we need to look at. What we need to look at is we need to look at how can we create a district where schools have autonomy, where teacher leaders and teachers and principals can have a say-so, and parents and students can have a say-so with what happens at their schools, rather than people at central office who never step who barely step in the foot of schools. So when we look at those issues, we need to deal with those issues as it relates to the best practices. And eliminating the school board and appointing some folks, I just don't see how that'll move us forward.
Okay. Anthony, what would be your message for the mayor?
You know, the first thing would be what have we done for our solutions thus far? And those solutions, where are they, first off? And then coming up as a collective group with the current school board, as well as community members, and figuring out what do we need to do to get to the next level. I think if we work together on this, it can be obtainable. But to cause a rip in our community where it already is, we need to be mending that and moving forward and supporting the people that's in those roles already.
Okay. Beatrice, what would be your message from there?
My message would be real simple, that the teachers and principals and our parents are the experts on the children. The children that they're teaching day in and day out, that they encounter, parents who are raising our kids. No one's a better expert on my daughter in this school district than myself. But another expert would be her teacher, who spends 6 to 7 hours a day with her 5 days a week. You know, when she called yesterday, I watched her press conference last night when I got home, and I saw that she said we need to let the state take over because they're the experts. I would like to know who those experts are. They're not the regents, because if you look at the regents' background and their skill set, it's not in public education. They're not educators, and it's no disrespect to them, but they're lawyers. They're in corporate or not-for-profit fields and sectors. We have plenty of those here in Rochester who would be willing to also be a part of having this community-wide call to step up to give us some directions. However, the experts from Albany cannot come into the Rochester community and tell the Rochester community that they know the trials and tribulations that schools and parents and community people are facing day to day. They're not even living here. So I don't know who those experts are. They're not the regents, and they're not, you know, no disrespect to the commissioner, but it's not her either.
And Beatrice, you said you don't think this is going to happen.
No, I don't think it's going to happen, and it's frustrating to continuously waste the community's time having this conversation when we can be focusing on what can happen with the parameters that are in place. And I think there's a lot that can happen. And I'll give you guys even just a sampling of what's happening even right now. We're going to be going through a period of leadership change. With that leadership change, because of the schools that got out of receivership and new schools that went into receivership, our principal and our leadership is changing. And we have not made those final decisions, but even in the conversations of them, there are a number of principals that are being transferred and moved and placed in schools that they didn't request. And then you have teachers and staff who have to now accept a new leader that they had no voice in that. That is bad for me. That is bad policy and protocols, because what we're saying is that you as an employee have no say in where you go and who you have to lead, and that the people that you have to lead also have no choice in who's going to lead them. And so I just think that's bad policy, and those are things that need to be addressed.
Well, Robert Hoggard brought up the fact that yesterday in Rochester, the Chamber of Commerce welcomed David Osborne, who was on this program alongside Adam Urbanski from the Rochester Teachers Association earlier this week. And just about the only place they agreed in that conversation was they'd like to see more teacher-led schools. Now, my understanding is there's only about 150 teacher-led schools in the country, but the idea being teachers could actually vote and remove principals by vote of the teachers, that they would have a lot more power and control over what's going on in that building. Let me ask all of you, would you like to see more of that?
I would like to see teachers and staff, not just teachers, because whoever's leading a school has to not only support teachers, but you have your paras and your TAs, and you have even your lunchroom staff, and your all of our staff have a critical role in our day-to-day children's lives. So I would love to see that teachers and staff and schools do have some say in their leadership, but I also would like the leadership to want to be at that school. We are putting principals at schools that they don't want to be at, not because they didn't, they just don't want to be there because that was not their first choice. It was a choice given to them. They may have had to pick from two choices, but it wasn't their choice to go there. And that is a policy, an issue that needs to be addressed and that can be changed. And there are lots of those throughout the district.
Okay, Anthony?
Yes, I definitely would like to see teacher-driven schools, as well as all staff. I think it's important. That brings forth great morale, and it changes the culture in the building. You know, we just was talking about little stuff in the classroom to help teachers build more relationships with kids, a hygiene closet, you know, snacks in the class that teachers have access to, supplies real quick. And some of those, you know, during these talks, you know, some of those points were made that schools are thriving. You said 150 schools where they're led by teachers are thriving across the country because, once again, they are making decisions. So it brings a great culture.
Okay. Robert?
Yes. Let's do some teacher-led schools. You know, as I said, as relates to autonomy, we need to have schools that are led by teachers, that are led by principals, that are led by staff at the school because they know how we can appropriate monies to help these kids. They know what our kids know and what our kids need, and they know the daily struggles that students and families go through every single day. And so the other, as I keep saying, autonomy, we have a district that at Broad Street, it's just Broad Street is in the way of everything, and principals feel like they have their hands tied, and they feel like middle managers. And what they really need to do is we need to empower them to be building CEOs. We need to empower teachers to have more of a voice. And if you look at colleges and universities, if the faculty, majority of the faculty don't think the president is moving the institution forward, they call a vote of no confidence. And many times that has helped colleges and universities, and I think that'll help in this case.
Okay, Minister Florence.
I really think we need to mobilize parents and families and to organize the community for certainly the systemic problems that are happening in our schools are leaving out the most precious resource that you have, and that's your community. That's your families, that's the parents that are directly affected. Now we have grandparents who are raising another generation of children who are not a part of the process and sometimes not familiar with the processes that can help move along education for our children. Certainly there is staff support that could be strengthened, but to have just teachers and staff leading the process, that's been happening already and it's failing. So the broader resource, which is the parents, the students, and the community, you look at this last superintendent selection process, the very resource that should have filled Dr. Freddie Thomas was the community and parents. And they weren't there because they weren't invited to the table to decide the future of the number one officer who will have a say over what children do or don't receive. So I would stress that we must keep the community connected. We must keep families involved. We have to get parents in the schools. And the more that parents are invited in, you can see progress. And there is a hesitancy by our system at the school district that is not welcoming to parents. And you can't expect children to do well. You look at our suburban partners, the parents are there, children are doing fine. The same thing should happen if we do the same thing here in the city school system.
We're going to turn it over to listener calls in our second half hour. We've got a lot of feedback from our audience, our listeners, who are very much engaged in the Rochester City School Board race. Four people in studio now. You're going to hear all of the candidates for the commissioner positions between now and June 25th. What I'd like to do is ask all four of the people in studio now tell you just a little bit about their own work and career background, and then what priority one would be if you are elected as commissioner. So, Minister Florence, Associate Minister at the Central Church of Christ and a leader of the Movement for Anti-Racist Ministry and Action. Tell us a little bit about your work background, why you're running, and what Priority One's going to be for you.
Well, first of all, I graduated 4 students from the Rochester City School District, was very involved, my wife and I, along with other parents, and we have worked as advocates here in the City School District. I would like to point out that I'm not running just alone. I'm running with a slate. I'm running with Judith Davis. I'm running with Andrea. And I'm also running with Howard Eagle, who was scheduled to be here, but was not allowed to be in the studio today.
But, well, we'll get to that, but go ahead.
But to move forward with that, the number one priority is what I had stated, is that we have to mobilize the community to get the one table assembled where the community, parents, stakeholders, taxpayers, we have to begin to bring everyone to the table, not just the powerful people, not just the decision makers inside the system, but we have to organize the community for change. That's what my candidacy, that's what our candidacy represents, that you'll see if we are elected as a slate, you will see change. And I think that everyone could buy into the fact that we have not received the bang for our billion-dollar budget. Children are not graduating on time. The numbers are not going in the right directions. Programs that should be funded are not being funded. Programs that have not been evaluated are still being funded, and it's not addressing the issues of our students. So certainly we would look at all of those and even other things that I'm not aware of because I'm not a sitting board member. But once getting there and analyzing what we can change for the better for our community, that's what our slate would be about.
Okay. Robert Hoggard, a graduate student at the University of Rochester Warner School of Education. And, you know, we talked to you in various contexts on this program. Tell us a little bit about your work history and then what Priority One would be for you.
Wonderful. So I was a long-term substitute at Leadership Academy and at Vanguard High School. And there I had a taste to see what students face daily and what families actually need. I left the district to go on to work at Cuca College in the Higher Education Opportunity Program. And there I saw so many students who were failed by the public school system, so many people that fell through the cracks, but they were given another chance. And I saw students who had to take remedial courses because they graduated high school reading at an eighth grade level, graduated high school doing math at fifth grade level, right? They were just pushed along and we never really properly educated them. And so I'm back and I'm running for school board because I'm saying we can't let the kids fall through the cracks from kindergarten to third grade and on through high school. And so we have to create a system that properly educates our students and just doesn't push them along. And what I've learned over the course of being a teacher, being at a college, and researching these issues as a PhD student at the Warner School is that we have to impact many of the issues that happen outside of the classroom, right? We need more social workers because we have social workers that have high caseloads and social workers that they spend the morning at one school and then the afternoon at another school and they can't properly devote their proper time to the kids. We need quality after-school programs. We can expand quality after-school programs. There are programs right now that exist. If they have more funding, they could make a broader impact. I think of institutions like Teen Empowerment and the work that they do. If they had more money, what could they do with that? To hire youth, to empower them, to give them soft skills, to get them ready for the job market, to get them ready for careers, to get them ready for college. And so we have to impact all of the issues, be more trauma informed in our practices and continue to invest in restorative practices, which almost got voted down, which almost wasn't in the budget, this current budget, but made the budget. But we need to expand and invest more money into restorative practice because there is, and research shows that there's a direct correlation between investing in restorative practices and restorative approaches and academic achievement.
Anthony Hall is a gang specialist with the City of Rochester's Pathways to Peace program. Tell us a little bit more about yourself and what Priority One would be for you.
Yes, thank you. I have 2 children, one in 58 school and one goes to a charter school. I think this work is phenomenal work. It's a calling. Day one, I want to pull the students, the community, and families. We in order to actually uproot some of the elements in the district, we have to get student-driven conversations. We have to make sure that when we implement things, students and the community too, at large, have a say in this in the meetings. It's very important too that when you talk about education, most teachers don't, you know, sign up or go to school and become an educator because it's a lot of money. They do it because they have a passion. And we have to do more for the education field, bring back morale, district morale, and make sure that they understand that we care. Also, a gap. There's a gap between family and community. We have to bridge that gap. It's very important that you have people that represents the people at the grassroots level. And I'm one of those guys. I'm on the street every day doing great work. I run a nonprofit as well, doing great work and impacting lives every day. So it's important that when you think about this work as a commissioner, it's just not being a stewardess. It's being an ally. It's safeguarding our most precious jewels in our community, and that's our children. Because what's at stake is lives, and I see both spectrums. So I'm here to do the work and look forward to be voted in.
About a year and a half ago, Beatrice LeBron was appointed to the board alongside Melanie Funchess. They replaced Malik Evans and Mary Adams. And Beatrice now running for a four-year term of your own now. Tell us a little bit about your background and what priorities would be going forward.
So my background actually is I started in non-for-profit, so in shelters. So I worked in domestic violence. I worked at teen shelters. I've worked in our settlement houses in Rochester. I've also worked in government, higher education, public education. And so prior to running for school board, I was working in the Rochester City School District as a long-term sub in special education, bilingual education, and left the Rochester City School District to go to Rochester Regional Health, where I work as a community health worker. And for me, that is a critical position for me also, because it allows me to be an advocate for individuals and link them to services, but also stay grounded in this work, grounded in the things that our families and our kids in this district are facing day to day. Because I think that people who live in Rochester, unless you're in this work, you do not get to see how people are struggling in this community day to day. And we have all these resources and they're not easy to access. And some of that is by design, you know, to deflect and defer people from actually touching and accessing those resources. And so I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done, not only with the Rochester City school system, but all these systems and how they're not communicating and working together. And this includes the county. You know, we know that our students historically right now are living in high poverty, that most likely they're touching some type of support services from the Department of Social Services, but that is a county program that is not interlinked with the city or the school district to work together. So my number one priority is to figure out how systematically all of those systems can work together. And so I talked about this yesterday as well. You know, one of the biggest challenges that we don't talk about is that our parents who are on social services and have to WEP, and what that actually means and looks like for them. So if I have to WEP and catch the bus and be at my website by 8 a.m., which could be mopping floors. Let me just say this. WEP is the work experience program if you're getting any type of cash assistance from social services, even if they're just paying your RG&E or your rent. And I have to go mop floors at the airport, but I have to be there at 8 a.m. because if I'm 15 minutes late, I'm going to be penalized. My rent might not get paid next month. So if I have to be there at 8 a.m. and my kid misses the bus, this is a really critical thing. These are critical things that happen. My child misses the bus. How then, I have to then decide how I'm going to get this kid to school, or if I'm going to find someone to just watch them, my neighbor perhaps, so that I can get to my WEP placement so that I don't get cut off. And so these are the things that our parents are facing day to day. And I know that that is not the all are of our parents. We have a wide variety of diversity in this district in terms of parents and their experiences, but that is a large segment of our population. And so if we're doing those things, if we're working on focusing on, I have a theory that, you know, my goal in the next 4 years is to, one, increase our parent engagement piece. So brick and mortar for families, that's no longer, that should not be considered engagement, because parents don't have time to come into our schools the way that they would like to. It's not that they don't want to. They just, the way that they would like to, they don't have the time. So re-engaging our families using social media and other outlets, and that includes FaceTiming for teachers and parents. We can create a system to do that. The other thing is that the district has historically had a parent advisory council. And if you look at the history of that council, and at one point it was actually broken down by the old school board and supposed to be rebuilt with better policies, and but it doesn't get the support and the training and the leadership guidance that it needs. And we also don't have parents represented from all of our schools and programs. And that is something that I want to personally focus on.
All right. You had a lot of priorities there. We're going to make sure everyone's got some time here. But let's get to, and let's try to work through directly something that Minister Florence referenced. And frankly, when we hear advocates for a state takeover, they often talk about dysfunction on the board. And they point to a recent incident, and Beatrice, the incident, which of course you're well aware, happened when the budget passed. There was some debate among the members of the board, and one of the candidates for school board, who's on the slate with Minister Florence, Howard Eagle, stood up in the audience and was making his remarks known. You were not happy that you felt he was interrupting, and eventually you looked like you snapped.
Yeah, I did snap.
You snapped?
But here's the thing. I have a history with this individual of harassment, and I have put this in writing to him and to other people who support him who have emailed me, and I've said to them specifically, I consider this bullying and harassment. You know, one person, I've said, you know, if you can contact me as an individual, but do not contact me on his behalf, because I do consider this harassment, and I will continue to build a case. And I even went to RPD last year. Like, people have to understand that this has been an ongoing issue even before I was an elected official.
You went to the police about
this. I went to the police to see what my rights were in terms of cyber bullying and harassment on the internet, based off of a very derogatory comment that he posted about me that my daughter sent me, because I haven't blocked. That's the other thing. This community is like, just ignore it. And I think because I'm a very strong and outspoken person, that people tend to think, because I'm strong and outspoken, that I deserve to be harassed by this individual and that I can take it. I don't want to take it. I don't have to take it. I don't want to be, like, at this point, I truly in my heart of heart feel that I'm being bullied by this individual. And this has been, again, before I was an elected official. And so it wasn't that I perceived he was interrupting. He was absolutely interrupting and heckling. And this is not the first time. He has a long history of doing that at the school board meetings.
Now, let me also just ask you about the comments you made, though. You didn't just tell him it's not your turn to speak. You made some personal remarks that certainly to my ear looked like they were personal and out of line. Do you regret making those remarks?
No, so the only comment that I have stated that I regret is making the neck comment. But when you're coming to heckle us and you're running for school board, you're not just a parent. I'm a parent in this district, too, and I've been a parent in this district since 2000. So if we're going to use the parent card, I can throw the parent card out there, too. And I understand that I was in my role sitting as the commissioner. Yeah. However, when you come repeatedly to the school board meeting and you interrupt and you're out of line, and, you know, we as a board, and I've said this to my commissioners, my fellow colleagues, we have to take ownership too, that we need to have a procedure in place, because any governmental agency in this city and in this county has a procedure for disruptive behavior that they follow. And we are really loosey-goosey with that procedure, and we need to tighten that up. And that is a hope of mine, that from this incident, that we tighten up those procedures. However, when you are running for school board and you're saying that you can manage $1 billion, but you cannot manage personal finances, for me, that felt that that was critical for me to say that.
Okay. And do you have any apology to make?
No, absolutely not. I'm not apologizing to anyone who's bullying me. And I'm going to say this again. I will make a request that he just leave me alone. He doesn't need to keep talking about me. He doesn't need to keep trying to.
Well, but if you're both elected, can you serve on the board with him?
No, absolutely not. I cannot personally serve on the board with
him. Would you resign your seat?
No, I would not resign my seat. But I will take what I needed to at that point to do what I needed to do to further what I needed to do with the police if I needed to.
Okay.
But I would hope that this community understands that this behavior is not okay for a woman to have to experience from a man in this community. It's not okay.
Last question on this, because Minister Florence mentioned that Howard Eagle was invited, as was Beatrice LeBron, as was everyone on the board. We are making time on multiple programs between now and June 25th to get all the candidates. Beatrice responded before Howard did to multiple emails. And at that point, you indicated to us
that I do not feel safe.
You do not feel safe with him in the same room with you right now.
No, I do not.
We honored that request. So,
Thank you, Minister.
Just to be clear, we honored Beatrice's request not to be in the same room with Howard. Howard will absolutely be on this program as a candidate for school board before the election. Okay.
Thank you for that clarification.
You want to jump in, Robert?
Evan Dawson, I'm ready to get back to the issues.
Yeah, I get you.
There are issues that are important to families and students, and they've been failed for decades, and we got to get back to the issues.
All right, let's get our break, and we'll get back to the issues next. Coming up in our second hour, Monroe County said back in March that it would be an across-the-board rate increase for pre-K special ed service providers. But it turns out that rate increase is just for one-on-one service providers, not groups, and a lot of kids need help in groups. We're going to talk about what it means for helping our children and the reality in front of us when it comes to the help that children need in Monroe County. It's next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Four of the candidates for the commissioner seats on the Rochester City School Board are here. Beatrice LeBron, Minister Clifford Florence, Robert Hoggard, Anthony Hall, all with us. And Robert mentioned in our first half hour that some of the work he's done, for example, at Cuca College indicates that even when you find students who have graduated high school, you find that they need some help. On this program a week ago, when we first talked about the proposed state takeover, Joe Klein, chairman of Klein Steel and someone who's worked in charter schools, especially locally, an advocate for reform, says that's one of the reasons he wants this state takeover, because too many students graduate who don't probably shouldn't be graduating. What would you say to that? Let's talk about how to start fixing that.
Right. He's right on the issue. Wrong on the fix.
Okay. Okay. Why?
You know, here's the problem. We have not in Rochester had the political will to make the right decisions. That's the problem. Not on school board, not in city hall. And so what we need to do is we need to just make the right decision. And we have the ability on June 25th for folks to turn out and vote, and for folks to vote for people who most reflect the issues that we need to fix through the system that we currently have. And there's a way that we can, there's things that we can fix now. There's things that we could have fixed in the last budget cycle. We could have invest more in after school programs. Teen empowerment is also in Boston. In the Boston area, the city actually helps fund teen empowerment. I would like to see the district work directly with teen empowerment, give teen empowerment more money to say, hire more kids and make sure they're district kids, and let them experience your model, because it's a good model for workforce development.
Okay, so those are some. So you think there are things right in front of us right now that we can change?
Yes, sir.
That will start making an impact. When it comes to remedial education, kind of, I guess that's the term here. How concerned are we, Robert, that is currently the case, that as you see it in your own experience, that there are some students who graduate who need to get help, who maybe, eighth grade reading level, fifth grade math level, versus the argument that says we have a way too sort of Eurocentric model of education to begin with, and that we need to focus more broad-based on our education?
Yeah. So what I've seen in the sort of remedial education and the Summer Bridge program, that's what's called at Cuca College, is that we impacted the student on everything that happened outside of the classroom. I found that it really wasn't the work. There were so many things happening at home. When I got that kid a social worker to talk to, a psychiatrist to talk to, they automatically did better. They automatically felt better, right? So there were so many things that outside of the classroom that I could impact that directly impacted the achievement. So yes, we got them tutoring, and I was sometimes one of the people that would look at papers and would look at grammar and would look and help these students. But when you look at these issues, We got to look at it that way.
Okay. Minister Florence, you can comment on that if you like. And I also want to hear from you, because you talked about the need for more anti-racist work in the district, and what that would look like is what I'm curious to know. If you're on the school board, what does that look like in practice?
Well, I want to say one thing real quick, and that is we have roughly 241 service providers in the city and in the county that are not on the same page to service black and brown children. So no one is up in arms in the European community about what's going on in the city school district. The percentage of white parents and students who are going through the same failing system, but they get colleges, trades of choice, go to the best schools in the world. The real issue here is the fact that we're failing black and brown children. And until there is, with the anti-racist education, until we deal with that, when black children continue to fail, all children have a chance to do worse because we are the predominant number in this school district. So when we can't name it first, if we were talking about white children, we would be very clear, very precise, very concrete on what next steps would be. Compared to the suburbs, they're very precise and specific about parent involvement. You're not going to do nothing with or for their children if they are not going to make the decision. Different in the city school district, that we have to provide the process by which the same opportunity that is given for parental involvement in other districts around us, that's not an ask, that's a demand. One of the things that the anti-racist education will do is to change the paradigm of how do we address the needs of black and brown children. That's where the will and the motivation has to come. When we really turn around the lack of progress of black children, brown children, and immigrants, and all of children of culture and color, that's when we'll be moving this argument along. Right now, we're stalled on wanting to call it what it is. We're allowing black children to fail, and they don't have to.
Okay. Different curriculums? Change of curriculum?
We need to change curriculum. We need to change systems. Matter of fact, as Robert pointed out, we keep bringing in people from the outside to tell us nothing different. No one who's come to town has told us anything different. Aquino's report didn't tell us anything different. It may have had a new spin on it, but the references he made to other reports prior to the one that he produced did not bring about any different information. He stated very clearly that racism was at the heart of the problem in the educational system. Now, if we don't attack that, if we don't reshape that, that's going to be dealt with on a day-to-day basis. We're going to be talking about this forever, but we need to act. That's the key here.
Anthony Hall, you've talked about suspension rates and the difference in suspension rates among racial demographics and what ought to happen in terms of the way we approach discipline, the work toward graduation, helping all students. What do you want to see change? What would you do?
So it's very important that, as Bobby stated, about outside of the classroom. I think we have to, as educators and potential board members, we have to understand that school has become the primary, in a lot of cases, when I say primary, household. So kids leave from the house at 6:45 and there all day, extended day, then the rec center, so they don't get home until almost 10 o'clock. So we have to make sure that we have enough resources and activities to circumvent some systems that's out in our community, negative behaviors. And the way we do that, there's already grassroots agencies in our communities that's thriving at a small scale. The district can boost boost their arms by helping them with resources, financial resources. And this will, in turn, lower suspension rate because now kids have an incentive. It's almost like a carrot. If you're able to tell a kid, listen, at the end of the, if a teacher says that at the end of the day, you're not going to be able to do this, more than likely the kid is going to say, you know what, I do want to do that at the end of the ice cream social, whatever have you. It changes the dynamic. And then also when you add a social worker or a counselor or just a one-on-one mentor with a child, you're wondering why a kid is acting out every day in school. The environment, Edison Tech has over 1,900 students, and the environment sometimes is not conducive for that child. And he or she may not have been labeled or anything, but they just need to change the environment. And how do you do that? By relationship building. That's with the mentor or counselor, whoever comes in, and be able to understand, oh, this is why you're acting out. This is why you're late. This is why you keep going back and forth to the office with referrals, because you're having issues at home. So the school, the dynamic of a school today, 2019, it's very different. As they stated earlier, from the 20th century, we have to think outside of the box, unorthodox approach and a common sense approach, meeting students as well as families right where they're at.
All right, let's get through as many phone calls as we can, starting with Dr. Marlo Washington on the line with us. Go ahead, Marlo. Marlo, are you there? I thought we have him. We don't have him. Marlo, I'm going to put you back.
Hello?
You are there. Go ahead, Marlo. Go ahead.
How you doing?
Always good to hear from you, sir. Go ahead.
Good to hear from you. And hello, Anthony and Beatrice, Kyle and Clifford. How you doing?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Good, good. I just want to just comment about the state takeover. I would like to know your official position about the state takeover. I don't think that's the answer. And even what Clifford said, about the fact about what is failing in the district is black and brown kids, and to bring the state to come from Albany here to Rochester is only an example and is only but a showcase of the failure that we did in terms of those black and brown kids. And I'd like to know your position about a state takeover, because that to me is not educational reform.
Dr. Washington, thank you. I mean, I think everyone said earlier on, there's nobody in this building, in this room, I should say, who wants to see a state takeover.
And there's no research available on any state takeover that has done the job. And so I don't really know why we're spending so much focus on that. They're bigger fish to fry than to deal with that.
Yeah, I would like to add, too. I think there is research, but that research says that it's not successful at all, any state takeover. The other thing I do want to add, though, is that, you know, the state often creates rules and regulations that are also binding to districts, and they're part of the problem, too. They make laws, make rules that don't make sense, and they don't fund some of these things that they require us to do either. So that's a larger conversation. So here we have a system created by another system that is already complex and doesn't make sense, we're saying here, not us at this table, none of us here support state takeover, but even our mayor is saying that the state has the answers. They don't have the answers. They have caused some of the problems by some of the regulations and the implications that those regulations have had in districts. So just want to throw that out there, too.
But also, Evan, you know, we classically in this city and in the county have been allowed to become professional mess makers. And we have a lot of people who like to manage mess. And with the state takeover, it's another opportunity for people who are furthest away from the issue. Because let's be honest about it. If the commissioner wanted to make changes, when she first came into the community, she had the authority to do whatever she thought was necessary. She thought the distinguished educator would be a part of making that change. When the community complained, that was an additional $200,000 that a poor district had to afford. Now we have a plan that tells us what we can do to fix some of these things. We're bringing in a new superintendent. New superintendent says that he has a 5-year plan that he wants to bring to the city, as if we don't know what our issues are. So that sounds like to me that we're getting ready to handle some more mess that we want to deal with, because that is really the problem. We can't change in Rochester because we're trying to take a little piece from around the country to try to fix problems here that we have to learn to work together and fix ourselves. And one last thing.
Yep.
I went to Louisville, Kentucky some years ago, and when came back to Rochester, Rochester said, we're already doing these things. In Louisville, Kentucky, they were last in the United States in education. They were threatened by the state if they didn't change in 5 years that they would be taken over. Their schools open at 6 a.m. They have YMCAs connected to the schools where the kids are not left outside. They're in a structure. They let the children plan the menus for the whole district. The suburban children went to the city buildings, and the children in the city went to the suburban buildings. What is that? That's government, city, and county working together, metro government. Here in this town, we don't want to work together, city or county or state, all on different pages. And then dictating to the parents and the students and the families what you're going to give us. We're tax-paying people. We should be able to demand what it is we're going to have specifically for black and brown children. That's the way it got
to
go.
Back to the phones. Robert in Fairport next. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything from any of these candidates about how they're going to try to improve attendance. You can't educate kids that aren't there. That seems to be an ongoing problem in the district. And I will say one thing from one candidate that mentioned something about suburbanites being Europeans. And I thought that that was a very odd comment considering the high levels of Italians in Rochester. I wonder if that candidate could comment on that.
Okay, Robert, thank you. First of all, we'll get to that second part in a moment here. I'll start with Robert Hoggard. He's concerned about attendance. Are you concerned about attendance rates?
Yeah, I'm very concerned with attendance rates. We have chronic absenteeism, and it's no secret. I think we've got to do some things. There are other school districts that are doing a lot more with absenteeism. I think we need to start knocking on doors. I think we need to send staffers home more. We need to call home more. What we've seen in the district, we've seen the letters do go out, but we haven't been more proactively with getting folks to school. But
okay. Anthony Hall?
Yeah, so it's definitely, once again, a collective community effort. The kids not going to school or coming later, what have you, it's based on what's taking place at the home. And in order to get that, you got to get resources to the home. So if JJ got to wake up his other siblings and he is late, then that's the nature of the beast. So we have to find out what mom or dad or whoever's taking care of him needs to support him being to school on time. So that's one effort. Also going back to community agencies, getting community agencies to help do knocking, to help build bridges back to the school, and also getting kids able in the area, in the schools where they live at. You know, it's very important, walking distance. Kids have to catch two buses from downtown to school in order to get to school. So it's unique.
Okay, Beatrice?
So first and foremost, a lot of the attendance issues that we have today are a result of cutting truancy officers. Like, we have to address that the district has historically in this community have made decisions that we didn't have foresight to the negative implications years down the line. And that was one of them. We cut truancy officers. Here we are now. We have this rampant attendance issue. And we do have an attendance issue.
Do we have the money to hire more truancy officers?
We actually created a position last year. And I hate the title. It's attendance monitors. I love the work that they do. I hate the title because it does not state what they actually do by that title. But their role is to go out and do home visits, and for our students who are chronically absent, connect with that family by any means that they have to connect with them. So they're out doing home visits. Unfortunately, this school year, those positions were in the budget to be cut. And some of us had to fight for those positions because as an outreach worker myself who does this type of work in terms of outreach and engagement, I understand the value of it. And oftentimes that work, that grunt, what we call grunt work, field work, direct service work, is not valued in this community and in agencies and organizations systems the way that it should, because these are the individuals that are going out to the homes to build the relationships, to find out what is happening in the home. I also just very quickly want to just touch on the fact that we do have restorative justice practices, which is all about re-educating individuals to work with our students in this trauma-informed lens. So I do want to point that out, but we are all still right back at the very beginning of these things. And so we need to make sure that we have good data to back up and supporting why we should grow these things.
Do we need more data on restorative practices?
We don't need more data on restorative practices. I believe that it works in the district to lower suspensions and do the work. But I do think that we need more funding and support to grow restorative practices in all of our schools.
And I think that's the point that Robert Hoggard was making earlier this hour. Minister Florence, final thoughts from you when it comes to attendance concerns about getting people in school. Is that a concern?
It's definitely a concern, but we also have to look at it not as simplistically as we've been saying it. You know, churches are a part of the community as well. And it's interesting that all the partners that the school system wants to relate to, my church happens to be right next door to the headquarters. Do you think the district calls on my church to partner with them to do some of this work? Because we are preaching to people who go to charter schools, who go to city schools, and attendance is very important. The churches in this community are very important. But also we need to talk about the children that are in the seat who are being failed, not the ones only who are not in the seat. We have a high rate of children that are in the seat and they're not matriculating.
It's horrifying to me how fast this hour has gone. And what I would just implore all the community to do is understand that between now and June 25th, we're going to have all the candidates for school board, but you've got time as well to find them on their various platforms. You just heard Minister Clifford Florence, Anthony Hall, Robert Hoggard, Beatrice LeBrun. Spend time with what they are talking about, platforms that they care about. You've got the time before June 25th. If you want to be involved, you want to vote. And I know they would like all of you to vote. Thanks to all of you for being here, and let's continue these community conversations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Evan.
Short break, more connections coming up.